Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And tonight, hoo boy! We're almost done season 13, which thank God for that. Fun fact, after we finish season 13, not counting, you know, between season things, there's only 9 episodes of Profiling Criminal Minds left. Because there's only 15 episodes in season 14, so that's 5 of our episodes. Then there's 10 episodes in season 9, which is, so 3 episodes to do the 9, and then the 10th episode and a retrospective on the whole series. On the whole season. Are we definitely going to do an extra episode after that that talks just about the whole, the series as a whole? I mean, probably, right? It would be weird if we didn't.
I would think so, yes. Given that,
Given the emotional journey on which this show has taken us, it would be weird not to commemorate that in some way.
In some way. Particularly, we got one of our loyal listeners wrote us a lengthy email about Gatekeeper and Strange Fruit.
And I'm going,
it's amazing, right, how the lawsuit makes you look as you're watching, because she added things.
Yep.
To Gatekeeper, and when I wrote back to her, I said, this was all before we knew about the lawsuit and stuff.
Yep.
And you wonder, but she made some interesting points. But we'll talk about all of that, I think, as we finish everything.
Oh, absolutely. But for right now, we have episodes to discuss. One of them is Die Hard.
Yes, or Ex Parte.
Please.
Okay. Like, I still don't... I mean, half the time I don't...
Stuff that happens outside of court. No. That actually, as a clever title for an episode, that one makes sense, because it's Ex Parte is communication without the other client. Right? Sorry, without the other lawyer. Without the other party in the thing. And that doesn't exactly tie in with what's happening here. But it's, you know, they're pretty close to having a clever title. You're right, that because it just means, it's not like it's a reference to having an out-of-court settlement. It's not. It's ex parte is when one lawyer tries to go to the judge without the other lawyer present. Ex parte communication. So yeah, you're right. I mean, I want to defend them, but it doesn't. I mean, they tried for a clever title and they got so close, but they couldn't quite make it. Because they're not smart people. All right.
Okay. When 3 gunmen break into a Washington, D.C. law firm and take the employees hostage, the BAU sets out to determine the perpetrator's underlying motives before the situation can escalate any further.
Meanwhile.
Simmons becomes emotionally involved after discovering that his wife, Christy, is among the hostages.
Okay, so first off, it's not a law firm.
No.
It's the ACLU.
Yes.
Or possibly the Southern Poverty Law Center. I think
it's the ACLU.
The one thing the Southern Poverty Law Center does that the ACLU doesn't do is decide who and who isn't a hate group. Yeah, exactly. They're clearly a combination of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it's not a law firm. It's a charity that does legal services.
It's a nonprofit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nonprofit that does legal services, fighting hate groups and looking out for people's civil liberties.
Yeah.
Oh man, this is a rough episode. Yeah, there's not a lot of nice stuff to say about this episode, is there?
I watched these 3, but like I watched this one. It is getting really hard to watch episodes where you just cannot get engaged. It was really cute in the beginning. You know, at like the Simmons stuff, and at the end where he says, yes, she says, oh, you started using the new phone. Yes, well, it's the phone that saved your life. And I mean, I fully understand these issues, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe I would have thought it was better before. I don't know. I have no idea in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
How I feel about all of, even all of that stuff. It's just, you go down. Everybody is, like, they're not getting any decent direction anymore. They're not getting any, like, the writing is perfunctory. But for sure, even the director is, like, why do you have this horrible thing between the, you've got the hostages, right? You've called the BAU in. So you set up the takedown, the hostage negotiation group, the SWAT group that are specializing in
HRT
hostage.
Is the FBI's hostage rescue team.
Yeah. Well, why are they so, everybody is so, I think that's what's bothering me more and more about this season is everybody is in everybody's face
all the time. Yeah.
They're always in everybody's face and they're so defensive.
Yeah. They're just so hostile defensive. With everybody.
They're hostile with everybody. It's no longer just the dumb cops everywhere else who aren't
everybody
FBI
in the FBI is also less than them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've gotten, as a team, they have gotten so arrogant.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah. They got away with everything. Well, no, last time they got away with it as we, you know, in our
as
last
we talked about. Yeah.
You know, and now
they now
what?
Have carte blanche to do whatever they want because they have a senator in their pocket and they're acting like it.
Yeah. And they're behaving like spoiled brats.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
they're not sympathetic at all.
They have nothing. It's just, it's, you know, and it's the writing and it's the, it is not just the direction, but it's the writing. And I mean, David Rossi.
He is the worst. Of them, he is the worst.
Well, I don't know.
Because he was already incredibly arrogant. Emily's pretty bad, too. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, it's getting worse. And I mean, and Tara, when she takes on the head of their hostage.
I know.
Unit, you know. And why aren't you guys all working together? That's
because they have to reinforce. And this is what's so despicable and so unpleasant to watch is they have to, they have to keep this myth going that not only are these guys profilers and that's important, they're also better at everybody else's job than that person is. No one can ever tell the profilers anything. They never get any information. They just go, they see a person, they tell that person how to do their job better, and then they move on to the next person. Every single time.
Because we're going to get this here, and then the very last episode, our next episode, right?
Oh, God. Don't get me started.
Yeah, well, no, we're going to deal with that separately. So
exactly, I know, you're right. We're not going to start talking about, we're not going to start what's happening in a week.
Expect two weeks of us being really
very hard on this team. Yeah.
Yeah, because of their, but basically because of their own behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
It is, and it's written that way. I mean, I can't blame the actors.
No, of course not. But except
that there's a direction too. Right? Like somebody has to be, somebody's being very defensive.
Yes.
And since the showrunner runs the show, you know, it's like, is this her?
We're not trying to make this about the lawsuit every week.
But.
Okay. But when you start noticing that the theme of the episode every week is that nobody gets to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
Nobody
gets
wondering.
To tell us what to do. You
and
start
that, that is that's the message every week from these characters.
And it has been like this
most
season.
Of the year.
Yeah. So and, but we
and
can
the
talk
thing is, we didn't really put our finger on it before, but again, with the lawsuit, you can't turn a blind eye to it.
Like
anymore.
You couldn't figure out. You figured they were getting like you figure they were getting tired. Like this episode, okay. And it has some, I mean, it does have some not bad moments, like when she takes out the phone and, you know, and puts it up there and all the rest of it. But
it's all fun, right? But at the same time, you can't help but notice that none of that is relevant to how the situation gets resolved. No, none of the intel they get on the team, like the bad guys, helps the situation, which is Matt just goes in there and shoots everybody.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, if the intel that they had gotten with the... Because, like, her luck... She almost gets killed because she's fooling around with the phone.
Yeah.
Like, she almost gets killed because she's fooling around with the phone. And they use the fact that they know who the guy is because they figured out his identity, right? Because he visited with Harry Grainer. The amazing Harry Grainer.
Harry Grainer.
The mayor from Buffy. One of the all-time great character actors. Mayor from Buffy, everybody. Right? Because they figured out it's his son. And that, and they're able to talk him, to distract him, to keep him from killing Matt's wife, which is great. But that only happened because she was screwing around with the phone. The only relevant thing that happened to, the only relevant thing to them dealing with the situation and getting out with no further loss of life is because Matt went in, because Garcia said, BTW, I found a ladder leading directly into that office that they're probably going to try to use to escape with.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, dumbest escape plan ever. The building's surrounded, guys. Do you think you can just climb in a ladder out of there? And I know it was going to be like Die Hard, and they were going to blow up the office, and people would spend so much time figuring out who the bodies were that they would escape in the ruckus. I still don't think that would have worked. But anyway...
Well, not in this age.
Yeah.
It's very funny, the other thing that I noticed, because we had off mic, right? We were talking about... we take down this show for being so anti-woman. I won't even... Misogynist.
Yeah.
And I think
all the time we have to talk about that.
And homophobic and worse, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we take that all the time. But the one thing you really can't say is that the show itself is racist.
Nope, never.
And so here you get, we hate white supremacists, these horrible white supremacists.
Right.
Right? Who is this their shout out against? This is 2018, after all.
Yeah.
You know, they're a white supremacist bunch and they're going to get his father out. And then one of the white supremacists calls the son a half-breed. And,
yeah, because he is part Mexican.
Well, his mother is Mexican, yeah.
Yeah. They point out that racism, I mean, they do one pretty terrible line where she's like, I'm not gonna, you know, help you get your message out. And he's like, well, then who's the real bigot?
Well,
because you dismiss all white supremacists with the tar all white supremacists with the same brush. And it's like, it seems like they're he thinks he's saying something clever. It's like, no, you came in and shot up my office. It's not strange that your whiteness has nothing to do with why I don't want to help you.
No.
You shot up my office, dummy.
And you're wrong.
Yeah, and obviously he's wrong, but just the fact that you can't expect to help someone, and I mean, he murders her because it's Die Hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I think one of the key parts is it's like, no, I'm not going to help a person who shot up my office.
Yeah.
Why would I? So I enjoyed that moment. But, oh my God. So something happened in this episode. Oh, by the way, in this episode, it starts. When this episode starts, right, they are stealing the van and equipment that they're going to use to sneak into the building, right? Yeah. And then one of the guys doesn't see any point in executing the two people who work for the company because they were just doing a job.
Yeah.
And even though one of them is black.
Yeah.
And these guys are hardcore Aryan nut bars, right?
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, wow, is that guy, that guy's hesitation going to play into the plot later? I wonder how this is going to factor in. And then it never does.
No, other than the, you know, they find the two guys.
Oh, no, no, but I'm saying... Assume,
yeah.
Yeah.
But in terms of, yeah.
That never affects the plot at all. The fact that one of them isn't down with, you know, murder for no reason.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would you add that plot element to this and then do nothing with it? Is my question. Yeah,
because when you're watching it the first time, you go, well, so is he an undercover agent?
Yeah, like, what's going on here?
That's, to me, that was my first thought too. The logical thing you would think is, well, maybe he's an FBI undercover. Deep
cover trying to find out about what the order is up to.
Yeah.
But
even though their leader is in jail, and then he's not.
Yeah, and then he's not. It's so strange. It's like, why do that scene with that character if that character is neither going to get developed any further or play an important part in the proceedings for the rest of the show?
Yeah.
Like, later he's just like, oh, I don't know if I'm 100% sure about killing everybody.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, you know what the plan was. And he's like, okay. But we saw you try to save people's lives earlier.
Yeah. So
it's very strange. All right. So now something that made me legitimately laugh. And I don't know if you're going to remember the thing that this accidentally is very similar to, but I'm going to mention it. Okay. So, when they're getting ready to start shooting up the office, one guy, wants to synchronize his watch. Yeah. And he's like, says to the other guy, what time is it? And he's earnestly asking what time it is. And the other guy responds, it's showtime. And that made me laugh so hard. And I don't know if you're going to remember why it made me. Okay, you obviously don't remember why.
No, obviously I don't remember.
Okay, a couple of weeks ago, I mean months for you people, but weeks ago for us, I recommended people watch the show Action.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful show.
Okay,
and there's a scene in Action, right, that is like, Peter Dragon is the producer who's the main character of Action, and he's, you know, has to deal with crazy people trying to make action movies in Hollywood. That's the whole premise of the show. And so there's a scene in the episode about the first day of filming a movie and how that's the producer's day and it's whole him putting out fires on the first day of filming. And the biggest fire is that the actor is the main actor in the movie. His character is asked, what time is it? And he refuses to say what time it is because he doesn't think his character is the kind of person who cares what time it is. And so they spend the day trying to negotiate what he can say in response to what time is it.
Oh, God, yes.
And the response is, he asks you what time it is, and you say, it's time. And the guy's like, okay, I can do that. And that's the payoff. And then so watching this, essentially that scene happens. A guy earnestly asks another guy, what time is it? And the guy responds with, a nonsense action line moment. So what I'm saying is, the show Criminal Minds, in earnest, meaning it, did something a parody of an action movie did on the TV show Action. And I know that's a weird thing to fixate on, but I found it very funny.
It's been a while since I saw Action.
No, I know. I just recently rewatched
it. No, no. Oh, yeah. I was. Yeah.
I found it on some YouTube, so I'm like, doo, 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 doo. This is the best show, and it really was the best show. So it's that I found very funny. But the episode is frustrating just because, like, none of the profiling they do factors in. None of the stuff that the people do inside to try and keep awareness of what's going, to get messages to the outside, changes anything. Like, nothing helps. Literally just, they assume that these guys are going to want to try to escape. They find a ladder leading into the building, and then Matt shoots everybody. And then that's the end of the episode. Like, I found that weird. Did you find that weird?
Well, I found it a particularly unsatisfying episode. It was like, you know, never mind. I can't be bothered rewriting these episodes.
I know.
Again, I would say this is like a first draft of an idea.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay, let's do our Die Hard. Okay, but how are we going to be able to make that work because you can't have, how are we going to make Die Hard work because you can't have the same kind of an idea as you have in Die Hard?
Exactly. Right? Like, where the guys really want to rob the place, but they're pretending to be terrorists. Blah, blah. Now, you can only do really terrorists. Well, if they're really terrorists, it's not fun to watch. That's why, by the way, in the book, Nothing Lasts Forever, they're really terrorists. And the producer was like, yeah, people don't have fun watching terrorists.
No.
You've got to change it. Like, it's not entertaining to people watching terrorists who have reasons for doing bad things. You're going to have to change it. And so that's the big thing that Jeb Stuart and Stephen D'Souza did to the script was it had to be about thieves pretending to be terrorists.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought that was an interesting thing to watch where this is just about terrorists. Like, oh, and it is, you know what? Joel Silver was 100% right. It is less fun.
Yeah, and but the problem is that you don't have any emotional connection to anybody.
No, because it's not like we've met the character. Like, we can, in the abstract, be sad that, you know, these lawyers who are just trying to help people are getting murdered by Nazis because Nazis are bad. But it's not like we spend a lot of time with these characters at all.
We don't spend any time with the characters. We don't spend any time really with the villains. And then you've got this poor kid whose father is a monster.
Yeah, who has brainwashed him into being a monster as well.
And then the very fact that, and then he's sitting there. Yes, yes, you've created this monster man who's going to hang or be electrocuted or whatever they do.
Right next
Although
to
I didn't
you, yeah.
think I didn't think they had. He's in Virginia, isn't he? And I didn't think they
I
had.
Think they have the death penalty in Virginia.
Oh,
I could
okay,
be wrong.
So I have no idea what states have it and what states
no,
don't.
No, it's not like that's something we keep track of.
Well, I don't want to because it's so disgusting.
But, oh no, it is disgusting.
But anyway, this guy, so he is totally, truly monstrous. Well, I wish my wife had given me.
Yeah,
you know,
son, so I had to. Know. I know, yeah, he's a monster. But, you know, he's a white supremacist. What are you going to.
Yeah, because like, then my son
monster.
Would be white. You know? Yeah,
I know.
Now
Jesus
my son
Christ.
Is just a.
Yeah, he's a
half-breed.
Jesus, I know, right? It's roof, as episodes go.
You know,
and the thing
so,
is, like you said, there's like no, they don't give us any reason to get invested in this world or care about it beyond the abstraction that, well, we've seen Die Hard, so, you know, aren't you going to remember how much you like Die Hard and think about that when you're watching this? And I'm like,
no,
I could just watch Die Hard if I wanted to watch Die Hard.
Yeah, if I want to watch Die Hard, because this, you can't. I mean, for all the complaints I can make about Criminal Minds, so many episodes, they do try. And I mean, the whole thing is to make you at least have some investment in some of this, right?
Yeah, but if that just not, doesn't exist in this episode.
No, because, I mean, I suppose they thought that putting Christie in jeopardy was the thing that was going to catch us.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But
they thought that.
Seriously. She is not Lisa. What was Hotch's wife's name?
Haley.
Haley. She's not Haley. I was thinking of that song, Lisa.
Ah, okay.
Okay. You're not Lisa. But anyway, never mind. Christy.
I get it.
But she's not. She hasn't been a well enough developed character.
No.
For
Again,
us to really.
They're asking us to care about the idea of a thing rather than giving us something to actually care about.
Care about, yeah.
Yeah, they're not willing to put in the work, and that's the problem. To develop, because they didn't already develop this character. We were invested in Haley Hotchner's journey.
Yeah.
You know, we were.
And when you had a movie like Die Hard, you got invested in Bonnie Bedelia and.
Yeah.
What's
and
his face?
Bruce Willis, Bonnie Bedelia and Bruce Willis's relationship.
Yeah.
And you did it quickly because they were good writers.
Yeah, they were good writers and the actors, you saw it right away, right?
Oh, completely.
And we all knew that Bruce Willis was wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
that's
the key part is like his character is wrong.
Yeah.
Right at the start. And it's the journey in that movie is him learning that he was wrong about everything. That's why them undoing his character growth in the subsequent films is such a disaster.
Yeah.
The only good Die Hard sequel is Die Hard 2, where it's like, yeah, they're married and more stuff happens.
Yeah.
Because he's grown as a person between 1 and 2. And then for all of the subsequent ones, they just want to reset him as a person back to 1, even though 2 is the only good sequel. He doesn't like it as a sequel. And do you know why he doesn't like it as a sequel?
Because this is a fun
piece of trivia. Well, no. I mean, he is. But no, it's because he was uncomfortable with the villain being Oliver North.
Oh, yes, yes, I did know that.
The villain in the movie, William Sadler, is playing Oliver North.
Yeah.
And he was not fond of that. Yeah, Bruce Willis took that very personally. Because he's extremely right-wing.
Yeah, all these stupid guys.
I know. Yeah. It's,
It was the 80s.
It was the 80s. It was Reagan's America.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis, by the way, you'll notice Bruce Willis doesn't talk about politics anymore. He used to never shut up about politics.
Yeah.
Second this Trump guy comes in, he's like, oh, no, I'm keeping my mouth shut. I am out of my depth. He wouldn't stop talking about him politics back in the day when he had Clinton to complain about.
There was a bridge too far.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. They're like, oh, right. My side is actually evil now. And I make movies, so I know what evil looks like. I know the good guys aren't the one building concentration camps and throwing children in them. I star in movies. I know what the bad guys look like. They all look like Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Literally in a lot of cases. Like, literally a lot of villains were patterned after Donald Trump. The bad guy in Darkman. You know, like, lots of villains patterned after Donald Trump in the 80s and 90s. They actually made a villain, like a supervillain president. America, you're terrible. All right, let's move on to the next episode, because this episode is so inessential. And by the way, what is more, like, scumbag arrogance than their absolute refusal to deal with Harry Grainer? Like, they're so psyched to see this man die. Like, Harry Grainer says, with a phone call, I can get all of the hostages released and these guys to turn themselves in. And all you have to do for me to do this, the only thing you have to do is take the death penalty off the table. Let me spend the rest of my life in jail.
Yeah.
He's not even asking to be released.
No.
And they essentially spit on his offer.
Yeah. And get...
It's a fair offer.
Yeah.
Like, where are you going to get a better offer than that?
And this would have all been over.
It would have all been over instantaneously. And maybe he couldn't pull it off. Maybe his son and the other guys want to go nuts and don't want to turn themselves in, blah, 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 blah. But there's no reason to not try it. They can, what do you call it? They can make it conditional so that the deal doesn't go through if the son doesn't let people go. And then it turns out the guy doesn't have as much power over his son as he wants to. But for them to turn down a solution that gets everybody out alive.
He didn't even ask for a lawyer. He didn't even ask for a DA to come in and sign it off.
He just wants
to sign off on it.
Exactly.
He just wanted a deal. They could have always rescinded it. They've done it before.
They lie to people. They lie to people all the time.
All the time.
They betray people all the time. So why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this the time where you won't sacrifice your, you know, self-image as a tough guy? Oh, wait, it's because David Rossi doesn't want to sacrifice his self-image as a tough guy.
Well, I think the show no longer wants to, has turned the BAU into this tough guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we started off the show talking about how they can't be questioned, they can't be wrong, you know, and the very idea that anyone would expect them to behave a certain way or ever be questioned is offensive to them now.
Yeah.
It's kind of disgusting what this show has devolved into. Speaking of, let's move on to the second episode.
Oh,
segues.
I'm going to segue for the win. All you can eat.
Yeah.
When two people spontaneously bleed to death in Arlington, Virginia, over the course of 24 hours and the CDC suspects bioterrorism, the BAU juggles identifying the killer and preventing a large-scale incident from taking place. No.
That's actually the same thing. Identifying the killer will stop the large-scale incident.
I know.
That is not juggling. Meanwhile.
In fact, I don't even care.
I know.
Meanwhile, Garcia reunites with her stepfather after learning that the drunk
stepbrother,
and he is her stepbrother, after learning that the drunk driver who killed their parents is eligible for parole.
Right.
And
you're a selfish woman, Garcia.
Yeah, but that was the best part of the episode still.
It is. It really is.
Because the bottom line is she does do the right thing.
Yeah, she does the right thing in the end.
In the end, right? But she's a long time getting there.
Oh, yeah.
But I even understand it. I mean, the very fact that she hasn't gone back to visit her family.
Yep, for years and years. Well, I mean, has she gone at all?
No.
Since she left San Francisco?
She's never been to the grave.
Yep.
Nothing.
Never been to the grave. That's a lot of guilt she was walking around with. Yeah.
Yeah, because she is consumed with guilt.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's her fault that her parents died.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was,
And
I get
never
it, though.
Talked about it, but she's never talked about it with anybody.
Nope.
So consequently, right? And it's
only
when
but I mean, you have to remember that therapy is for the weak.
Yes. Mm. But it's interesting because it's her stepbrother asking her, but I still don't understand what our parents were doing out so late at night.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's the thing that gets to her.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the thing that starts her finally on a journey that.
Yeah.
That she, in the end, when she comes up to the parole hearing, I mean, the guy's been in jail for 20 years.
Which, by the way, completely unbelievable.
Well, never mind.
No, but I mean, it's completely, just for the record, drunk drivers who it's their first offense and are 18 years old don't go to jail for life.
25 years.
Yeah. Well, no, but he was in there for life.
Life.
Basically. And there, you know, he's already been there 25 years. Mm-mm. Or 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
And it's like, that just doesn't happen. I mean, if he killed someone while he was in prison, you know, yeah, sure. Maybe 20 years. But the idea that he's there just for a drunk driving that killed people, no, that doesn't happen. Also, I'll tell you something else fun. Nobody gets parole in California.
Ah, really?
Do you know why? Here's a fun story about how screwed up America is. And this is a true story I'm about to tell you. To create, quote unquote, better accountability, they passed a state law in California that the governor has to personally sign off on any parole for, especially, I think for anybody, maybe it might be for anybody, but it's definitely for anyone who's killed someone. So the governor has to sit down with a pen and say, this killer gets to go leave jail. And as a consequence, no, there's no political upside to letting a murderer out of jail. And as a consequence, no one in California gets parole. Ever. I mean, literally, the state created parole boards so that it would take the questions of people's rehabilitation out of the sphere of the political. That's why parole boards were created in the first place. And California just undid that.
Well, yeah, because they vote on everything. Right.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And they have these referendums all the time. Apparently, California has the worst sort of when you go to vote, the worst number of
the
things,
worst
usually.
Ballots because they have these giant referendums and you have to vote on every
thing.
Although this one literally was just like the state legislature passing it. But yes.
So somebody hated Jerry Brown.
Jerry Brown. Well, no, actually, I think it happened when Schwarzenegger was was governor. I almost said president. Sorry about that. So yeah, just that's a fun fact. But yes,
well,
saying
the impetus for that kind of a thing.
Oh yeah,
was Jerry Brown?
Yes, probably back in the day.
Yeah,
from the first time he was in charge.
Yeah,
he's been governor twice. It's kind of amazing. So anyway, yes, you're right. She actually does like do the right thing. She does grow up. She does face up to her own guilt, which, as we keep saying, she could have done years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Had she just gotten the therapy she so clearly needs.
Yeah, like in that family. But she was pretty much one of the older ones in the family.
I mean, she was the oldest one.
And,
she only has younger brothers.
Yeah. And
they say that in the episode.
And she can't, right?
No, she can't.
She just can't admit. Well, she just couldn't admit that it's her fault, you know? And so and she says it, it's well written.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was, it was one thing. Right?
It's 100%, I think, the high point for her character this season.
Yeah. It's the best
character moment she gets.
Well, and I think it basically does, if you take a look at what she finally comes out, it explains so much of her wanting to be a child.
Yeah.
And wanting to ignore that. So she's been pushing this back and pushing this back and pushing this back.
Over and over and over again for years and years and years.
Yeah. And so she creates this false persona.
Yep.
Of this ditzy woman who was a hacker and could be the Black Queen and could, you know, do all of these things. And now she works for the good guys and Mommy and Daddy will be proud of her, right?
Yeah.
And she's making amends. Everything but dealing with her own guilt, she's doing everything she can to make amends for the fact that she believes inside that it's her fault that her parents are dead.
Yeah.
If she hadn't broken curfew, they would have never gone out, and this kid would have never killed them.
Yep.
So,
core she believes. So much about her personality.
Yeah, it explains how the personality that she has created for herself to deal so that she wouldn't have to deal with this. And she hated this guy, refused to have anything to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first crack comes when her stepbrother says, oh, it was so nice of you to send the tulips to the grave. She hasn't each sent flowers.
And that was a heartbreaker.
To the grave on the anniversary of her parents' death.
Yep. No, it's up to the murderer to do that.
Yeah, and
that's a rough one to hear.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I don't think that you have to go to your parents. Like, I don't go to my parents' grave every year, but I would say once every couple of years, I still pop out to the cemetery and have a little conversation with my parents. Or 2 or 3 years, or Allison and I will go out, my sister and I will go out and take the dog for a walk around and you know, just talk about it. And
yeah, it's healthy.
Every few years, but to have never gone, not once, right? She really had this enormous level of guilt. Like, because basically, who were her brothers raised by then? Because
that's
she
a
obviously
really good question.
Left. Yeah, she just took off.
Yeah.
You know, but I would assume that her stepfather's family, there was
thoughts.
Would have swept in and raised the boys, right?
I would hope so.
In their home or something. I would assume that's what happened because, you know, there would have been an aunt or something that would have.
Yeah, because we know she didn't.
No, she just ran.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was, I found that part, yes, it shows you that there is a reason for her being as horrible as she is. And why, I mean, if you even wanted to say why she wouldn't develop a real relationship with anybody.
Yep.
Because she carried this guilt around. And she certainly didn't believe she deserved the nice guy like Xander.
Yep.
Right? That sort of thing. So, it explains an awful lot when you're denying that kind of a truth to yourself. And it's never far away because she was 18, 17, 18 when it happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like 17 or something. And so it's locked in to her self-worth and her image of who she is.
Yeah.
Oh, and totally.
So, and so it explains a lot. So it was good. And, and so this actually, of all things, this is what gives the character some level of closure within the context of this show.
Yeah.
Not season 14 and not even season 15. But at least you know that now that she's come to terms with this, she may actually be able to marry, eventually, Adam Rodriguez.
I know. Now right? that she's gotten over this stuff, it's entirely possible.
They actually have a relationship because remember, that he, of course, is a Latino. And so that would make it even worse, because he would remind her, if you even thought about it, he would remind her of her brothers and her father and all of those things.
Yep.
So, yeah. So it's quite possible.
That I mean, she'll be a healthier version in the future.
Of herself now. And as she says, she will be able to sort it out with her stepbrother.
At some point.
Because that's what she does. And she will probably tell him the truth and deal with the fallout of that. So, yeah. No, I was really happy with that part. This has taken us away from the bioterrorism start. And I'm just...
But I mean, honestly.
Yeah, honestly.
Who cares?
What is there to say? Yeah, who cares about the rest of it? Isn't that funny, right? But you just go, oh, dear, you know. It is just because the BAU, all of these people are just hard-edged and a pain in the butt, right? And it's just been building this year.
Yeah.
It was never quite like this before. The CDC suspects bioterrorism. No, and it's not in. And how did they get it? And I can't even remember how they got it. If I think long enough, how they got the rat poison into them.
No, he's been spraying people's food when they went out to eat at restaurants. Yeah,
and stuff like that. Yes, that was it. And then there was the end. And of course, you know, but again, What is missing here is that
what
it's not, and I've never gotten particularly mad when they at least have always tried to give you that's what's missing in the shows now. It's that this boy, man, the story is horrendous.
Yeah.
It is a terrible story, right? Mm-hmm. And it used to be, in the old days of Criminal Minds, they would at least acknowledge that this guy, it was a terrible situation that he's dealing with, what between the boards, but he's taken it the wrong way, right?
Yeah. He has completely been undone by the series of tragedies that happened to him.
Yeah, and this completely missing now.
Yeah.
That level of
empathy, understanding. Empathy. Yeah.
And I hate to go back to it. I really hate to go back to it, but yeah, we'll talk about it, I think, next week more.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
You know, because therefore that's what makes these two episodes so far make you like they're missing that resonance that this is a tragedy, you know, and
every part of this is a tragedy. It's not just that this guy's a murderer. Every part of this is a tragedy.
Yeah. And they don't give you enough to understand why it's a tragedy. And they don't give you any.
Yeah, they just gloss over it. They're like, oh, here's the part where we list all the terrible stuff that happened to him that turned him into a murderer.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't think about that. He's just a bad guy.
He's just a bad guy. And we're going to take him down.
Also, why do they have such a hard time figuring out if anyone had a grudge? When we find out later in the thing, does he have any connection to this? Does the guy who got murdered in the opening sequence have any connection to this guy? Oh, well, yeah, he wrote a really nasty review of his family's diner that went viral, and everyone read right before it went out of business, ruining this guy's life.
Yeah.
Really? That didn't turn up in your background of that guy? Penelope? Oh, no, wait. Penelope was out of state.
She was
too distracted, and she missed the fact that a guy who ran a restaurant, this guy was poisoned at a restaurant, and a guy in the food service industry frigging hated this guy.
This we can give. That one we can give Garcia a pass on.
Yeah.
Because she had to deal with stuff.
Exactly.
Her own personal stuff.
She was very busy.
And she should have never agreed to do it. But then again, they couldn't hire another actor, I'm sure, because they're
low on money. Yeah, no, they can't just logically bring Kevin in to cover for her that week the way they should have. No, I'll still be working on it. Well, you weren't working on it, and a bunch of people died because you didn't do the quick Google search.
No.
Hey, has this guy pissed off anybody in the food and service industry lately? Well, yeah, a guy's restaurant was destroyed after he wrote a nasty review of them on Yelp. Oh, damn. And is that guy a guy who's had a lot of huge amounts of tragedy in his life that would turn him into a serial killer? Yep. Maybe we go talk to that guy. But she didn't do that. And so he had time to poison everybody at the Chamber of Commerce meeting.
But you know whose fault it is?
Who?
The showrunner of the BAU, Emily Prentice.
For not getting someone, for assuming, well, yes, that yeah, she would Emily be going, able to still do the job while on the road.
Yeah, give me a break. I mean, do you have no empathy at all for what Garcia has gone through? Has nobody yep. ever talked to her and asked her how many times she goes back to San Francisco?
Yep.
Like, well, aren't you going to go and see your brothers?
Yeah.
She you know, does, has though. Nobody has nobody over the last, now we've got 13 years of this show?
Yep.
Bothered
inquired
to,
about bothered her family to, situation?
You know, it yeah, I mean, it belies the fact, this whole business of, oh, yes, but you're my family. Oh, freak off.
I know. You got a family that you're not doing right by, Garcia.
Yeah.
And you're hiding with this surrogate.
You've got
family.
Three brothers.
Yeah. And you're hiding raised... with this surrogate family because they don't make you feel guilty.
Yeah, because they would never allow you to take responsibility for anything.
And here's a fun fact. If you wonder why people, you know, act this way, and it's a thing that people actually do. If you have done something bad to a person, people naturally will then start, how do I put this delicately, treating the person that they treated badly. You'd think, oh, I would feel guilty about that, so I will try to make it up for them. That's not what people do. What people do is they treat that person worse and try to distance themselves from them, because making amends is hard.
Yeah.
And you start to associate your feelings of guilt with that person, and you start blaming that person for the fact that you feel guilty. And what ends up happening is you screw that person over in any way you can. That's what real people do when they have hurt someone. They proceed to turn that treat that person worse. And whether they meant to or not, they have perfectly reflected that in Garcia. By saying that she feels guilty for what she believes she did to her brothers. So she has just completely removed them from her life rather than facing up to how she behaved.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a great portrait of a hero, but a 100% psychologically accurate portrait of just a flawed, sad person.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and
way
to
go.
And all I can say is she will now start to get better.
Yes. She will definitely start to get better.
Yeah.
Like talking to her brother the first time, like getting the guy, hopefully helping the guy get out of prison, and then talking to her brother about it. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And that's a great sign of person that she's going to be able to have the personal growth. We don't know for a fact she will, because again, her family is never going to be mentioned again for the rest of the show. Spoiler alert. So we don't know if she pulls it off. But her willingness to try does say good things about her.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree with that. But yeah, like the episode of they just search around for someone who has a connection to all of the people. And they're like, he just attacks the business community generally.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, well, also the woman at the bank does business loans, so she's probably has something to do with that. And so they just track... who do these people have in common? And the result is this guy whose family business went under after his parents died, and they got this terrible review, which was by one of the victims. So yeah, you put all that together, and it's actually a fairly easy crime to solve.
What? Yeah.
But it would have been a lot faster if either Garcia had been there doing her job, or they had bothered to get someone to come in to replace Garcia.
Yeah.
Either way, that this would have gone a lot easier. But yeah, no, they had to give her her journey and not hire an additional person for this week.
Yes, because they have no money left.
No, they clearly are out of money. Oh, God, it's so true.
Oh,
all right,
Lord.
Yes, let's move on to...
Mixed Signals.
Ooh.
When two Taos, New Mexico residents are blitz attacked and later found dead with holes drilled into the left temporal lobes of their brains, the BAU determines they are searching for a serial killer obsessed with proving that an inexplicable collection of phenomena exists.
An inexplicable collection of... That is such a weird way to phrase that. An inexplicable collection of phenomena. Okay. It's just strange, guys. Seriously, though. Okay, are you ready for a fun fact about this episode?
Sure.
This episode is based on the Taos hum, which is, you know, a real thing that people believe in. I don't know if it's true or not. I've never been to Taos. I know it's a thing that a lot of people have looked into. But it was the basis for an episode of The X-Files.
Yes.
Where Bryan Cranston played a white supremacist who is suffering from this horrible thing caused by the high tension wires in the area that's going to make his brain explode. And he takes Mulder hostage and they have this road trip. And they're, you know, trying to flee the increasing pressure in his brain. It's a really good episode of the show, but it's historically important because that episode was written by Vince Gilligan,
who
liked and wanted Bryan Cranston for this part, and who then, because they got along so well and he was so blown away by what he was able to do in this episode, wrote Breaking Bad with Bryan Cranston in mind because of the episode based on the Taos hum. So it's, you know, 6 degrees of separation away from the creation of Breaking Bad.
Huh.
I just thought that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So yes, that's the true story of that. Now for this episode. Something hilarious happens right at the start of this episode, and I just wanted to mention it. So this doctor is in a, this is the second week in a row we've dealt with doctors who don't know to call the cops if someone is tearing up your office. Like, in the first time, she's like, it might just be kids searching for drugs. Yeah, you've just described drug addicts who were desperate enough to attack a doctor's office. Call the cops. But then we get the craziest line, not in the history of the show, not even this year, but just the craziest line in ages, which is they talk to her husband. Who was on the phone with her when she died?
I know.
But anyway.
Yeah.
She's like, she was there waiting for this patient who seemed a little weird. And he's like, did she say who it was? And he's like, no, that would be a HIPAA violation. There's no way to find out who the patient was. And I'm like, do you not, like, have you not been here for every episode of Criminal Minds ever? You violate people's medical privacy at least, like, once every, like, at least, we do 3 episodes a show. And if we had been bothering to keep track, I would argue that at least once in every one of our episodes, so every 3 episodes, they violate doctor-patient confidentiality. Like, that's just what they do on
one
the show.
One way or another. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They're searching through people's medical records all the time. So why is it suddenly, like, why can they suddenly not get this guy's records? And I mean, I'm sure he booked under a fake name, but at least let us know that they searched it and find out that he booked under a fake name. You know?
I know. Why didn't he hang up the phone and call 911?
Yeah, that's the real question.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real
question. Seriously, dude, call 911.
Seriously.
Your wife's getting murdered.
Murdered.
Call 911.
And you're on the phone talking to her. What's going on?
Yeah. Like, the cops, it's a medical center. I'm sure there's a police station not too far away, and they will be happy to look into that for you. It's weird that he doesn't call 911. No, I agree with that completely. Yes, it's... But overall, it's interesting because they... it's not profiling that saves the day. It's literally, what do you call it? Just that that the killer happens to point out that a deaf woman is lucky because she can't hear.
Yeah.
And once you hear that he thinks a deaf woman is lucky that she can't hear, and you find out that he's been drilling into the auditory portions of the brain, oh, well, then there's a good chance that it, what do you call it? That this is related to the famous Taos hum that they have heard of.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then once they do that, it's not hard to find the guy at all. I don't know why they didn't find it earlier, because...
I also don't know why they didn't say that she committed suicide.
Who?
The wife.
They did say she committed suicide.
No, they show it. They don't say it.
Oh, you're right. They never say it. Well, we're going to talk about that in a second. Okay. The thing I wanted to say first was, the thing that I found the strangest about it, right, was there's mm-hmm. this scene where we find out what the teacher who got killed was up to. But it's like, they find out that he had, and this is the part that I found so strange. Why did it take them that long to the point where they actually have to talk to the guy who's an expert in the hum to find out what the teacher was into? Because, and I can't stress this enough, the guy wasn't keeping it a secret that he was selling coffins to protect you from the hum.
No.
Like, he had a business going. So, like, why wasn't the first thing that happened when Garcia Googled his name and looked at his web history and where the money was coming from? Like, he wasn't hiding the income and running an illegal business.
No.
Like, making Faraday cages for people to sleep in because they're worried about electromagnetic signals, that's a completely ethical job. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Now, you can say, oh, well, they don't really work. Maybe they don't really work, but there's nothing wrong with doing it. Right now, this is a true fact. There are people who, and this is going to make you sick to know it, and I'm almost sad to be the one to have to tell you, who are on the internet right now selling people $200 bracelets or like a plug or something to protect you from 5G signals.
Yeah.
Because 5G has created coronavirus. Like, this is what people on the internet believe, and scumbags on the internet are making money exploiting these in one way or another unwell people, right? But do you know what? None of the people exploiting these unwell people are keeping it a secret. None of them are hiding what they're doing. They're going out there online and saying, you can't trust medical professionals. You can't trust scientists. You can't trust the government when it tells you 5G isn't giving you coronavirus. You can only trust me, because that's how you make sales.
I know.
And there's no reason this guy wouldn't be acting the exact same way. It would not be a secret that he was selling people these coffins. And it would be the first thing people knew about him.
Yeah.
Like, it would be the first Google result when you Googled his name would be, oh, he's the guy who sells the Faraday cage coffins for people in Taos, New Mexico. I wonder if the fact that he had his ear drilled out has something to do with that.
I know.
But they act like it's this big secret, but that's not how the crazy, doesn't believe in science or doctor community, and it's a big community. That's not how they act. Yeah, they're not secretive.
It's like wearing copper bracelets to stop arthritis.
Exactly. Except much more awful.
Well, it's worse because copper
arthritis is a real thing.
Well, no, it's not. That's not why it's worse.
I know.
It's worse because the Faraday cages, coffins. Yeah. Are really expensive, and all these other things are really expensive. The copper,
but a copper brace is just a couple of bucks. Yeah, that's
you know, I mean,
you're right. Looking at it through that lens, you're right. The copper bracelets are much less sinister.
Yeah,
they are not expensive at all.
It's not like you can. Yeah, anyway, no, don't go on. Yeah, go on.
No, we're not going to do a whole thing about people's ascientific beliefs here, because you know what. Take all the crystals you want, but, use all the crystals you want to make yourself feel better. That's fine. My point is, anybody who loves crystals will tell you, you just go in, like, no one keeps the fact that they're dealing crystals a secret.
Yeah.
You can just go into a store and buy crystals. And it would be the exact same way with the Faraday cages. If this guy's keeping a secret, it's such a secret, A, why would he? But B, how's he getting customers?
Yeah, well, that's the point, right?
Where is customer base coming from if it's a frigging state secret that he sells these things? Or maybe Garcia's head's not in the game because she's still worried about her stepbrothers.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's it. But yeah, that's the part of the episode that really bothered me. When we found out what he did to get killed, to attract the ire of this guy, I'm like, well, shouldn't that have been your first lead? That he was dealing, that he had cash, a cash relationship with people who are, who are, mentally not all quite there with this hum thing.
Yeah.
Or at least that it seems to be. Again, I'm not saying the hum's not real. I don't know. I'm just saying within the world of the show, it's implied pretty clearly that it's all in people's heads.
Yeah, that's
what the show seemed to suggest.
Yeah, I mean, I've known people that electrical whatever.
That have electromagnetic sensitivities. And you're not going to say that's not all real, but, Better Call Saul made a strong case that
a lot of people. Well, that's exactly what I thought of, right?
Exactly.
Better Call Saul. Immediately.
Such a heartbreaking story, that Chuck.
And that's how you tell that story.
Yeah.
That poor,
Oh, poor Chuck. Such a monster, and yet so...
He was a monster.
He was a monster, but he was so tragic in so many ways at the same time. Ah. Just a beautiful character. I hope he got an Emmy for that, but he probably didn't.
I don't know. Never looked.
I haven't had the guts to check whether they gave Michael McKean an Emmy for that, because I don't want to be heartbroken when I find out they didn't. But anyway, Better Call Saul. We can't recommend it hard enough. This episode, he saves that woman's... He refuses to kill that woman.
Yeah.
But what I didn't understand was, I can kind of get why he murders the doctor, right?
Okay.
I kind of get why he murders the guy at the power plant, because the doctor feels like is keeping records from him and hiding the truth of this condition. So I get that motivation, right? I get why he kills the power guy, because the power guy he does everything he asks and it still doesn't work, and he's just angry and frustrated.
Yeah.
What I don't get is, why does he go and murder a random construction worker?
No, I don't know.
So you don't understand that either, right?
No, except they needed 3 kills on
for some
on camera.
Reason. They needed 3 kills on camera. So, okay, I thought that scene was a little weird, because it's like they were so desperate to end the teaser, right? The teaser, the cold open.
Yeah.
They were so desperate to end it with a kill that they just have him completely nonsensically murder someone for no reason.
Yeah.
Okay, so good. I'm glad I'm not alone in objecting to that scene.
That one I couldn't figure out at all. But
okay, so now we're going to get to the end. They go to the house that he and his wife shared. They find him out because there's one woman out there who is severely into the hum community and said it was torturing her, and she's mysteriously disappeared. So they're like, maybe her husband is the killer. And then they look at the picture and they show the picture to the deaf lady. They just compare it to the deaf lady sketch and they're like, yep, that's him.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the thing. In this episode, we see that she has killed herself.
Yes.
And my response is, this plot doesn't make sense unless he killed her.
Yeah.
And yet the show acts like she killed herself.
Yep.
And I don't understand why.
Yeah. Because if he killed her, if he did... quote unquote euthanasia.
Well, no, not euthanasia. She would have convinced him that they could safely drill into her head and destroy her ability to hear, and it would fix her. And she has
him
down into madness. It was not euthanasia. He was trying to save her because she had so beaten him down that he honestly was caught up in her madness.
That's what I thought was going on.
Oh, thank
and then
you.
It
okay,
turns I'm... out, okay, yeah, no, that's initially what I thought was going on as we're going along, right? Because I had seen this episode before, but I had forgotten it.
That
as
part,
I said,
yeah.
I have not put any of this stuff into my long-term memory. And so as I'm going along, sometimes I think, oh, and then I'm going, because I do, once you start watching them, you remember them, right?
Of course, yeah.
But I just, they're so they're such non-entities, right? That it's that you don't care at all, or they don't horrify you either. And these days I watch them and I close my eyes every time some horrible thing comes
about
on
to happen. Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's what I thought that he had. Yeah. That he had.
Okay. So yeah.
Accepted this.
I just,
as
he
well.
Had, he had tried to save his wife in this extreme way she demanded. And now he was left with nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tragedy. Like, it's a horrifying tragedy.
And that
right?
would have made the episode much more tragic.
Yes, absolutely. And it would have, but
and
at
it
the
would
end
have
of the episode.
It would have made more sense.
Absolutely. Like, it just would have made
because
more sense as
it
a
it never
plot.
Made sense that if she commits suicide,
yeah,
right, why all of a sudden
he is
goes
he killing people?
Crazy?
Yeah.
And then killing people.
Yeah. But if she badgered him into trying to save her with this brain, you know, impromptu drill brain surgery, well, of course, A, he would be, you know, completely so far gone. Yeah. Like, he would be completely gone. He could never forgive himself. And of course, he would kill people in the same way his wife had forced him to kill her. Yeah. Like, of course he would.
Yeah.
His actions make perfect sense if it's if he killed her.
Yeah, and I still don't understand that they couldn't leave.
Well, yeah, the line that it's like, oh, well, he had a 2-year contract to rebuild a thing. And I'm like, so?
So your wife
start again somewhere else.
He's killing her. Break
like,
the
this
contract.
This place,
leave.
Yeah, break the contract. Leave. Start over as a contractor somewhere else. Spoiler alert, if you don't have a criminal record, and you're a trained electrician or whatever it is he did, you're never going to have trouble finding work.
Well, yeah, and all you have to say is, and in Taos, New Mexico, they would have been very understanding.
Yeah, like
if
my
his
wife
was
is having a serious medical condition. She can't live in this city anymore. We have to leave. So it's like, they would have lost everything if they left. What did they have to keep from losing? Her wife is his wife is in such bad shape. So she like tore all of the walls out of their house, you know, to get all of the
and
circuitry
it's not,
out.
Wait a sec. It's not even their house.
You're right. It's a rental.
It's a freebie by
yeah,
the art
they're living
collective
he worked.
Because she is a potter, I think.
Yeah, she's a potter. So yeah, it's not even their house. They can just leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was a real problem with the episode is they didn't. They were so hooked on this idea of him as this, you know, horrible, that this horrible thing had happened and turned into a monster, blah, 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 blah. Right? Which is fine. Yeah. Like, that's a perfectly good way to, you know, come up with a character and to frame a character. But you got to give us a reason why these people wouldn't just leave beyond there would be financial repercussions. Financial repercussions go out the window when your wife is asking you to drill a
hole in your head. Yeah.
At that point, you're like, maybe we just move to Michigan, you know? They always need people to build houses in Michigan. Oh, no, he's an electrician. He's installing solar panels. He's an electrician. They always need electricians everywhere.
Electrician. There's always a shortage of really good electricians.
Exactly. You know, like he's an electrician because he understands how the text works. He was installing solar panels. They need people to install solar panels everywhere. Solar panels are the future. So yes, he 100% should have just left.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unbelievable that he didn't. Yeah. All right. So not a great episode, but, at least like there are the pieces here where with a bit of a tweak, you would have had a good episode.
Isn't that funny? That's what I was going to say. Like the other two, well, the first one just feels like a first draft. It needs a major rewrite.
Yeah.
The second one, well, you know, you could have the BAU finally care again. and then this one, yeah, you could just tweak it. And
if you tweak this, you could
have
a good episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's almost there, but you need the reveal that his wife begged him to drill into her head, and instead of saving her, it killed her, and now he's gone mad, and he's, like, going to save everybody.
Yeah.
The same way he, quote-unquote, saved his wife.
Yeah.
Like, that 100%, that's your episode right there, and the fact that they didn't see that really really does make me worry about them a little as writer.
Well, just remember, we're almost at the end, so.
We're almost at the end. The show has been headed, you know, straight down for a lot of years.
Yes, we're on the skid.
Yeah.
Like, we're just...
We are well down the whirlpool on this one.
Yeah, we're almost at the bottom of the canyon.
Oh.
We're going to hit bottom.
It is weird that the show even ended terribly.
I know it.
So strange. All right, so that is that for this week's shows. If you want to join us back here having watched next week's episodes, what is the homework you're going to have to do?
Oh, you just have to watch Believer. The cliffhanger to make sure that they got a season 14.
I know.
Because the fans...
A cliffhanger, yes, a cliffhanger that will keep people on the edge of their seats till next season, thus ensuring there will be a next season.
Yes, and this is still...
To quote Sledgehammer.
Yes, and what's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Is that when I think about this, right, I'm going, okay, so things must have been up in the air.
Yeah.
There must have been an iffy when they decided to do this episode because it comes out of nowhere. But we'll talk about that next week.
Oh, are we ever going to? So yeah, join us back here for that. But for now, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling related fiction you'd like us to check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you back here next week for the big season 13 finale and a retrospective on the season. But until then, I'm going to say, you shouldn't have already been laughing. Au revoir.
Have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.